This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
We are moving toward an era of truly personalized medicine where research is uncovering the genetic basis for disease, as well as mutations and biomarkers that can be targeted with drug and biologic therapies. We need to continue to identify the right patients for these innovative therapies. And this is where companion diagnostics has a foothold and has continued to evolve to support those efforts. Hello, my name is Tiffany Levin, and I'm the owner and president of 55th Parallel. My business focuses on providing regulatory development and business advisory services, primarily focused on companion diagnostic programs and personalized medicine. Today, we'll discuss the development and regulation of companion diagnostics with Megan Doyle, the Global Regulatory and R&D Policy Lead for Diagnostics, Digital Health, and Combination Products at Amgen. The two of us are working together on an inaugural personalized medicine and diagnostic conference sponsored by DIA, and we are looking forward to talking today about what companion diagnostics are, what is driving their use, and what some of the challenges are in developing these products globally. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and, of course, love having these conversations with you. I feel like we could talk about these topics for hours, so I'm looking forward to having a shorter and sweeter conversation with you today.
So let's start at the beginning. What qualifies as a companion diagnostic? How are they used? What is the basis?
A companion diagnostic is generally defined as an in vitro diagnostic that provides information that is essential for the safe and effective use of a corresponding drug or therapeutic biologic product. If we were to put it in more general terms, a companion diagnostic can analyze samples from the body to help identify patients who are most likely to benefit from a therapy or that might be at increased risk for serious adverse reactions from a therapy. And as Tiffany knows, that's why companion diagnostics are so important. In certain cases, they could help identify the right patients for the right therapies. So as we're developing medicines more and more that target the genetic and biologic basis for disease, we're really advancing science and transforming patient care. And companion diagnostics are a really important tool to identify the patients who may or may not be likely to benefit from those therapies. And they're typically co-developed, meaning they're developed in parallel with the drug or biologic therapy. And of course, regulatory authorities define what a companion diagnostic is within their jurisdiction and typically opine on how this co-development process should proceed.
And we know from experience that although there may be a playbook for co-development processes, there takes a lot of coordination to get that done and aligned.
Right.
So regulators define a companion diagnostic, and that may vary in certain areas, but whether a companion diagnostic is needed for a particular drug or whether a companion diagnostic claim can be pursued for a test depends on drug study design and resulting data, or it heavily depends on those two factors, right?
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you 100%. The study drug, or if the drug study is designed to demonstrate performance only in patients with a specific mutation or a biomarker, you know, a biomarker positive trial, that might require a companion diagnostic then to identify the patients who are more likely to respond to the drug in clinical practice. But of course, this also begs the question of whether, you know, as we develop more and more of these targeted therapies, are all of them going to need a companion diagnostic? That may be overly burdensome or unwieldy.
Right. And whether a test can be labeled with a companion diagnostic claim will depend on the evidence gathered to support that the test correctly identifies the patients for the drug or not. So whether they're going to include or exclude a patient population. So we know regulators define companion diagnostics, and we touched upon this a second ago. They don't all define them exactly the same way. In your experience now, can you speak a little to how these definitions are varying across regions and possibly what challenges that may offer?
Sure. As you mentioned, they're not defined uniformly across regions. For example, in addition to the uses we just talked about, in some jurisdictions, the companion diagnostic definition could include certain tests used to monitor response to treatment for the purpose of adjusting treatment to achieve improved safety or effectiveness, but that's not included in the definition in some other jurisdictions. And I think it's really important for us to note that many countries do not have an existing definition yet. Companion diagnostics are just regulated as a diagnostic test in the highest risk category. So while the regulators say what qualifies as a companion diagnostic, and there are some general similarities, as you mentioned, the definitions globally are not precisely the same.
So based on what you've been experiencing, in your view, is any single regulatory agency or group of agencies leading the way on outlining regulatory approaches to enable marketing authorizations of these products? And I guess the sub question, is there harmonization on the horizon?
In the ICH regions, I can say the regulatory agencies have all really sought to outline regulatory approaches to address companion diagnostic. So in Japan, in 2013, they issued a technical guidance on development of companion diagnostics and the corresponding therapeutic products. And then that same year, PMDA issued some Q&A documents and information on the application process for companion diagnostics and for the associated drug therapy. And of course, in Europe, the EMA Pharmacogenomics Working Party has developed a reflection paper on co-development of pharmacogenomic assays in the context of drug development. That was back in 2010, and they've been working since on a guideline for the development of predictive biomarker assays in drug development. But of course, since the regulatory approach to IBDs has changed in Europe in 2017, we know the EMA has also been working to develop guidance on companion diagnostic co-development and align requirements for the clinical trials of the drug product and the diagnostic or the medicinal product. Also in the ICH region in the US, the FDA has been working on this issue since 2005 and issued a final companion diagnostics guidance and definition in 2014. Building on that, in 2016, FDA issued a draft guidance outlining how co-development of companion diagnostics should proceed alongside drug development, which is really helpful. Since then, FDA has issued some other guidance documents in this space about how to develop a companion diagnostic for an entire class of therapies, as well as fact sheets on the level of evidence required to make companion diagnostics claims for certain tests. I don't know of any particular regulators leading in this space, but certainly in the ICH regions, all have adopted an approach. And we can say, as far as the FDA, you know, they've even cleared or approved, I think, as of the last count, 44 companion diagnostics to date, including some that involve really novel technologies like liquid biopsy or even image processing software across more than 20 indications, including a tumor agnostic indication. So the regulatory paradigm for companion diagnostics is well established in these regions and in the US, as we just mentioned, but it's continuing to advance. And I think there are some opportunities for harmonization.
Yeah, that's on the horizon for sure. So we touched upon the US co-development guidance document and how it outlines how diagnostics should be developed in parallel with the drug, but it really talks about how you integrate that within the drug development process. It's an important point within that paradigm. The US approach generally envisions that the companion diagnostic and development will be used in the study design to generate evidence to support the safety and efficacy of the drug. So can you speak a little about how that works in practice on the sponsor side?
And as you mentioned, it's all about that integration. The idea is that the drug sponsors would design the trial so that it generates evidence to support approval of both the drug and the companion diagnostic. And so the trial would be designed to demonstrate the safety and efficacy of the drug, but also the clinical validity of the companion diagnostic. For example, the ability of that test to correctly identify the patients who are likely to respond to the drug. So then ideally, when that process has proceeded in that integrated fashion, the two products can be approved contemporaneously. But I also think it's important to note that some companion diagnostics have, of course, been approved outside of this typical co-development pathway after a drug has been developed and approved. And we're seeing, you know, more and more of those in recent years. We probably will in the future as more targeted therapies are already out in the marketplace.
And more people and companies want to develop tests to provide that added benefit and reach.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the similarities and differences in regulatory approaches to these products across regions. What trends are you seeing globally?
And this kind of gets to the harmonization point we were talking about a little bit earlier, and that being on the horizon. As we mentioned, you know, in many countries, the definition and approach to regulation of companion diagnostics is still nascent or evolving, but we are seeing some efforts toward harmonization, which are a good thing and are very welcome. Just last year in 2020, Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration, or TGA, issued new companion diagnostic regulations, which sought to align with the US and EU approach. And in China, we've seen efforts to develop a regulatory pathway for companion diagnostics that incorporates learnings from other regions. Just in 2019, NMPA, China's National Medical Products Administration, issued its first guideline regarding companion diagnostics, which defined the test similarly to other jurisdictions, which is, again, a positive development toward harmonization. The guideline did not address the co-development process or regulatory pathway for original companion diagnostics that are being developed for the first time with the drug, but we understand those guidelines may be forthcoming, which would also be a very welcome and positive development. So there is some of that harmonization and certainly opportunities for harmonization on the horizon, but across regions, there are still some key differences in how these products are regulated and approved for marketing outside of just the definitions. You know, in some countries like the US and Japan, companion diagnostic can be approved contemporaneously with the drug. And this is obviously ideal, but because some countries do not have a companion diagnostic pathway already established, or drugs and devices may be reviewed by separate regulatory bodies and on their own timeframes, that isn't always the case for contemporaneous approvals. For example, in the EU, the approach to regulation of companion diagnostics is slightly different because drugs and devices are reviewed and approved under different legal authorities and by different entities. But again, the approach to companion diagnostics is also changing in the EU, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, and it's changing as we speak. So I'm sure we could probably devote an entire podcast to that topic alone.
In some countries, right, we know they need to have home country approval first. Right. So that this adds another layer of, you know, having to really think about how you're going to roll out, right, your companion diagnostic program with your partner.
And how you're going to integrate that and plan for your co-development and approval pathways in all of those different regions and how you have to think about that up front.
Lots of moving targets. So let's talk about that. Europe is undergoing a pretty major change in how diagnostics are regulated. Companion diagnostics in Europe are currently regulated as med devices under the IVDD, for which there is no legal category for companion diagnostics. And these tests historically have been self-certified. This is intending to change May 26th of 2022, when the new IVDR, the in vitro diagnostic regulation, will supplant the current directive. The IVDR includes a definition of companion diagnostic, as well as new expectations for diagnostic regulation. So they have incorporated a risk-based classification system, intended purpose, and clinical evidence to support companion diagnostic claims, which is different from where we were. So how do you see that impacting companion diagnostics overall?
As you mentioned, up until the implementation of the IVDR, which we anticipate next year, you know, many companion diagnostics distributed in Europe did not have to go through a notified body for conformity assessment prior to affixing the CE mark and then just marketing the product. So as you said, manufacturers could instead self-certify as to their conformity with the applicable directives and affix the CE mark. But under the new regulation, companion diagnostics now, as you said, will require clinical evidence and this conformity assessment by a notified body prior to affixing the CE mark and marketing the device. And obviously, members of the device community are familiar with notified bodies. But for our listeners who may be new to this, these are third-party organizations that are designated by a European country's national competent authority to assess the conformity to the regulation. So in addition to this notified body conformity assessment, there's a new real focus on intended purpose in the regulation under the IVDR. So generally, you know, companion diagnostics would be considered Class C devices under the regulation, but the level of clinical evidence to support their approval will be appropriate based on the test characteristics and the intended purpose being kind of the linchpin for how they'll be regulated. As far as how this could change things or impact things, I think the IVDR in theory should make regulation of companion diagnostics and their development more consistent in the EU because the regulation applies directly to all member states. But I think it's fair to say more guidance is needed on how the IVDR will be implemented for companion diagnostics, particularly with respect to co-development, what we've discussed. What are the expectations for co-development and the regulatory review processes? For example, right now, it's not clear how the review of the companion diagnostic and the drug will happen contemporaneously, because the diagnostic and the drug will be reviewed by different entities. And so while the new regulation specifies that the notified bodies should consult with national competent authorities or the EMA, details on how this process will proceed exactly have not really been provided. And as we talked about, this can present a challenge for sponsors that are really trying upstream to plan and execute these global co-development programs. So, and thinking about the different regions and the different expectations. So while the IVDR is intended to enhance consistency of expectations and consistency of approach across member states, and it may ultimately do so, I would say how to satisfy the expectations is still a bit unclear for sponsors.
I would agree. And how they're going to be implemented. Review timelines are going to be critical. How is this actually going to work in practice is crucial to understanding, right, for companies wanting to operate in this space. What are some of the other challenges facing drug sponsors developing products that require companion diagnostics?
One of the key challenges for drug sponsors is the timing of the development and review of companion diagnostics when they're intended to accompany, you know, an accelerated therapeutic development program. So we know regulators have developed or are developing accelerated regulatory pathways for drugs that are intended to address areas of high unmet need, but we don't have a similar accelerated pathway in most jurisdictions for the companion diagnostic. You know, in my view, I think this will be a critical issue in the coming years because these expedited approval programs have now become the primary means by which new drugs and biologics enter the market in some countries. You know, a recent analysis by Friends of Cancer Research showed that of 97 new oncology drugs approved in the US in the last 7 years, 90 of them went through an expedited approval program. And in the EU, EMA has developed the PRIME scheme, which allows for accelerated assessment of medicines that target, again, a high unmet medical need. And at least by our last count, 86 medicines have been accepted into that scheme. And then you've even got regulators working together through an effort called Project Orbis, whereby the regulators review really innovative cancer therapies simultaneously in an effort to facilitate faster patient access in their jurisdictions and in these areas of high unmet need. By our last count, there were 39 approvals through Project Orbis since May of 2019 when it started. Drug development and approval is just accelerating at a rapid pace, and we think this trend will only continue in our industry. So when a manufacturer is developing a drug on one of these expedited timelines or that might proceed through these expedited pathways, developing and approving the companion diagnostic on the same timeline can be challenging in some cases. We know the regulators have so far exhibited considerable flexibility in these situations, you know, to really help streamline the development and conduct the diagnostic review on the same timeline so they can be reviewed contemporaneously. But sometimes those flexibilities that are being applied are not always shared broadly with sponsors so that the development plans can be crafted accordingly. People can think about these things upstream. So I think it would just be great to work together with the relevant stakeholders to think about how can we promote open communication and work as sponsors and across industries to help bridge that gap wherever it exists.
Yeah, and it's an important point. It's always beneficial, right, to find means to increase communication, open communication, whether that's across divisions, at least with the US, and, you know, across sponsor partnerships for sure. It's like a regulatory liaison role.
Yeah.
So what about the impact of the regional changes in diagnostic regulation that we just discussed? How does that impact co-development on the sponsor side?
Executing global clinical trials can be challenging when a companion diagnostic is involved due to these different regulatory schemes and testing paradigms across regions. For example, you know, under the IVDR in Europe, clinical evidence, including a performance evaluation, will be required to support the approval of the diagnostic. But as we mentioned, as far as sometimes it not being clear about kind of how this will be implemented, it's not necessarily clear how a performance study of the diagnostic should be done in the same study, maybe under the same protocol as the evaluation of the drug. And in many, many jurisdictions, as we talked about before, a single study is sufficient to generate evidence to support approval of the drug and demonstrate that clinical validation of the diagnostic. As regulatory systems change, if that's no longer an option in Europe or elsewhere, it could make it challenging to enroll sites in those jurisdictions in a global study, because you could have a situation where a separate protocol for the device performance study would need to be drafted and approved by the regulator. And as you can imagine, if a regulator makes new recommendations impacting the study endpoints or the sample size or just the overall design, then that could really impact an ongoing global study. So this is about where it can be challenging to sort of think upstream about the various jurisdictions, the various approaches, and the various requirements, because trying to execute a global study can be challenging for these reasons.
And especially if you have different requirements, right, to generate that performance evaluation under a different protocol. The other issue that one may run across is how do you pool your data? If you're actually, to your point, if somebody had to change an endpoint or do something, what does that really mean? So it would be important to continue to think about how do you harmonize it? There are lots of moving parts here.
Yeah, exactly. We should mentioning China before, I would say, in addition to sort of some of these challenges in implementation in Europe about this and about the performance study and how do you generate that clinical validation for the diagnostic, in China, my current understanding is it requires that samples be analyzed at the study site itself, which can also make it really hard if you're executing a global study or potentially impossible to use one central lab and one diagnostic in development to process the samples for the whole global study. So this is just another example of these differences and how they can make executing a global study challenging and could potentially result in certain jurisdictions not being represented in a study or could result in the sponsor having to conduct a separate study to support approval in that jurisdiction, which could potentially delay access to the new treatment for patients in that jurisdiction. There's a number of current challenges with respect to doing this and getting data that work across the whole study, which may need to be addressed if we really want to continue developing these personalized medicines at this rapid pace.
So we know, based on our history in this space, that companion diagnostics are most often developed in an oncology space and for oncology therapeutics. That's changing a bit as our technology advances, our abilities advance. Let's talk about where companion diagnostics are having the most impact today and how that's anticipating to change moving forward.
You're right. Obviously, most targeted therapies and companion diagnostics to date have been developed in the oncology space. Primarily, you know, because this biomarker testing can help identify which, if any, therapies the patient might respond to or which might not be a good option for that patient. And I think in that way, biomarker testing is really helping drive the treatment choice in certain cancers. But we also know that current evidence shows biomarker testing is still really underutilized and treatment decision making can be hindered by the delays in getting those test results. Availability of and access to high quality diagnostics is critical to helping eligible patients be identified for certain appropriate therapies in oncology or otherwise. But as you mentioned, at least in the US to date, only a couple companion diagnostics have been authorized for conditions other than cancer. But as far as what might change in the coming years, I do think we will start to see the development of companion diagnostic in these other therapeutic areas, especially as more and more biomarkers are identified that represent targets for new drugs outside of oncology. I don't know if you have anything further to add or your thoughts on that.
I would agree. We're starting to see value in biomarkers that may lead to companion diagnostic claims in areas outside oncology, such as cardiovascular, diabetes, and rare diseases, for example. These will likely present additional challenges for sponsors, but we will be learning together. I think the collective experiences coming from oncology have created a great roadmap for how sponsors and regulated agencies can collaborate moving forward. One other thing to consider is that the rapid advances in technology can present challenges. For example, I'm thinking about technologies that may enable a more efficient and potentially more effective means of diagnosing or selecting a specific patient population as compared to traditional paradigms. So we have to continue to work closely, not just with our partner, but with the agencies to determine the best and hopefully least burdensome pathway to support a contemporaneous approval.
You know, as you mentioned, this is going to present new challenges, and I think we're going to have to work really closely with the regulators as we see companion diagnostics moving into these other therapeutic areas. Especially for sponsors, it's not always clear when co-development of a companion diagnostic is useful or needed outside of oncology, particularly if there's testing for that biomarker of interest already available in the marketplace or maybe already used by clinicians. So ideally, hopefully regulators globally will really develop communication channels where sponsors can work with the regulators and discuss these questions early on in the development program. You know, in the U.S., obviously, sponsors can take advantage of various meetings with FDA prior to and during the development program, and can bring representatives from both the drug and the device centers in and have them both be present to discuss the diagnostic and the drug issues together. In the EU, medicinal product sponsors can discuss companion diagnostic questions with EMA via the scientific advice process, but there's no current mechanism for obtaining jointly agreed upon advice from the EMA, the notified bodies, the national competent authorities, especially because notified bodies cannot consult. So I think there will be some challenges as we move into that space to ensure, as you mentioned, we're all really working collaboratively to figure out when these companion diagnostics will be needed and what the expectations are.
And with that, we should turn to talk about emerging technologies. We're on the cusp here of opening our minds to where companion diagnostics go. And now we think about emerging technologies, and how do you foresee those emerging technologies impacting clinical development and regulatory review?
We're going to see digital technologies continue to change the field. It'll be really interesting as artificial intelligence, machine learning continue to advance, and these types of algorithms, I think we may see more of them playing a role in diagnosis of disease generally. And that could impact companion diagnostics as well as all of the software and medical device regulations. So I think that'll be a really interesting development to kind of watch.
Right. And hot topics emerge in the field of companion diagnostics on occasion, right? And so what do you think is going to be on the horizon in the next 2 to 3 years?
Next generation sequencing, of course, which is where you can sequence the tumor for multiple mutations and biomarkers with the same sample, has really changed the testing landscape, and I think will continue to be a hot topic in the coming years, because we're now seeing next generation sequencing based tests approved as a companion diagnostic for a host of therapies because they can screen and test for a number of biomarkers at once. Also, I think liquid biopsy products will continue to be a hot topic. We mentioned these really early on, but these tests use only a blood sample to screen for biomarkers, so they don't require tissue from a biopsy of the patient's tumor in most cases. So the first liquid biopsy companion diagnostics, as you know, were approved in the U.S. this past year. And though they're often, at least in clinical practice, as far as what we've seen, they're used in conjunction with tissue-based tests, I think liquid biopsy will continue to be a hot topic, given that tissue biopsies can be burdensome for patients. And of course, it's also challenging at times to obtain sufficient tissue to run a battery of biomarker tests, especially with the really rare frequencies of some of the mutations that we're looking for. I also think tumor agnostic companion diagnostics will be a hot topic. We briefly touched on this early on, but these tests identify patients for various therapies based on a biomarker or mutation, but are not limited to use in specific cancers. I think those and companion diagnostics for an entire class of drugs will continue to be a hot topic. I also think we'll continue to see regulatory pathways and reforms globally to address diagnostics generally and companion diagnostics specifically, as we talked about with some of these harmonization efforts and new regulatory pathways on the horizon. From my perspective, the COVID pandemic has really put a spotlight on the importance of diagnostic tests. And so I think many regulatory authorities were already seeking to address companion diagnostics and promote availability of novel therapies in their region. But I think the pandemic will probably advance that. I don't know if you think of or see other hot topics from your perspective, but that's what kind of comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the more we can get to a point where we're able to get samples that are less invasive and do more with them, the better off we're going to be in turning samples around and test results around and the movement probably of information as well. You know, we have had restrictions in the past on where samples move. How do they move? How quickly can they move? Can they leave the country at all? Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
the more we work to streamline that as an industry, I think the better off we'll be. And I do agree the COVID pandemic has put a spotlight on diagnostic testing in general. And so we're likely to see some kind of reform and changes. So thank you so much, Megan, for joining today to go over some of these issues around companion diagnostics.
Thanks, Tiffany. It's been really fun. I always enjoy talking about these topics with you and hearing your perspective.
To hear more about these topics, please look out for more details about how to join DIA's upcoming offerings and meetings related to diagnostics and personalized medicine.
learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.